Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to Live Well Anyway. I'm your host, Mackenzie Coppa, and on this podcast, we focus on wellness, beauty, style, planning, and life. Basically, life is messy, and here we learn to live well anyway. So join me on this journey as we figure it out together. And just to get us started, I'll go first. And today, I'm going first for a second time because we are actually doing a replay of an episode that we had last year, but I knew it was the perfect timing to be bringing it around again because I am actually reading this book for a second time, gearing up for the new year. It's a perfect New Year's read, and I thought, you know what? I want to refresh everybody on this episode because I think it's one of the best books that we can all be thinking about again as we're heading into a new year, and that is The Feel Good Effect with Robin Conley Downs. It was a super fun interview. She's so informative and knowledgeable. I know you are going to love re-listening to this episode if you've heard it before, or listening to it for the first time if you missed it before or you're new here. Also, if you happen to be new here or you just haven't done it yet, I would love for you to come follow me on Instagram. That is one of my favorite places to connect with all of you guys. You can find me at Mackenzie Coppa. Slide into my DMs. Tell me what you like about the show. Tell me what you'd like to see more of. We have many more fun new things coming in the new year that I'm super excited about and will be telling you all about very soon. But it's just a fun place to connect. And if you want to go even deeper, if you just love the whole Live Well Anyway idea, you want to connect with other like-minded ladies who are also trying to live their best lives in the midst of all of the chaos and everything, if you want to focus on wellness and beauty and style and planning and life, then you're gonna wanna come over and join us in Patreon. I always feel like New Year's is the very best time to be joining us in Patreon because we have a huge focus on really getting on top of our resolutions and offering each other accountability and encouragement. We're doing a whole thing with tracking this year where we're really trying to pay attention to our lives and the things we're already doing and tracking what we're doing from day to day so we can make real sustainable changes in our lives. And so if that sounds cool to you and you wanna come join us and chat with me over there when I do live videos Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, then come join Patreon. It is such a good time. Patreon.com/livewelltogether. We want you to become a part of the community. We really want to welcome you in with open arms and get down to the nitty-gritty in there. We have so much fun. Plus, it's a really great place to be learning and growing all the time. So again, join us over at patreon.com/livewelltogether. All right, but without further ado, let's get on with this episode with Robin Conley Downs talking about the Feel Good Effect. Welcome, Robin.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
I know. I have been really looking forward to this interview because I have been listening to the audiobook that you just released of The Feel Good Effect. Well, pretty recently, right? It was this fall. Right about that.
Time has no meaning anymore. Yeah, but yes, right? It was in September. Yeah.
September. Could have been the month of Flafluga. Like, who even knows like what anything is anymore? But I have loved this book, especially because of 2020 and the way that we're having to look at goal planning and just kind of structuring our lives in general. I think that you've done such a good job with this book and I'm excited to talk about it. But first of all, would you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah. Well, hi, I'm Robin Conley Downs and you can find me at the Feel Good Effect podcast, and then at Real Food Whole Life on Instagram and on the web. As you mentioned, I'm an author of the book, The Feel Good Effect, and I'm really here to help you make small shifts that create big change. So leaning out of impossible standards and feeling bad about trying to feel good.
Yeah.
And just sort of reclaiming wellness, but also reclaiming your day-to-day and how those small shifts can add up to a life well lived.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love that. It so aligns with what we are doing at Live Well Anyway, and I'm super excited to talk about it. But first, I want to do a little bit of a rewind. And I was wondering if you could tell us just how you even kind of got started on the web. What made you start your website? How did you want to be involved with wellness and all of that kind of thing? Like what sparked your interest there, and how did that grow over time?
Well, I started my website when my daughter was two. And it was a really interesting time in my life because for most of us who are parents, things change when you have children. And for me, it was really almost a rock bottom moment, but not maybe in the way that sounds. So up until that point, the baby wasn't the rock bottom, but there was some lifestyle things going on. I had been really pushing and striving in my life and career and just my approach to life up until the point where she was born. And then I had been really just trying to do, I don't know, I was just striving. Like I always was trying to do more. I was working a full-time 60-hour week job. I was in school full-time through my whole 20s and into my 30s. I often was working multiple jobs because I really just have lots of passions and loved what I was doing. And that I could sustain that okay. I wasn't taking care of myself, but it didn't seem that wasn't on my list. It didn't occur to me that was something that was necessary. And I think in your 20s, depending on how old you are listening, I think you can get away with a little bit more the younger you are, depending on various factors. But then when my daughter was born, I had, up until then I'd had some infertility and a couple miscarriages and then a very difficult pregnancy with her. So after she was born, I wasn't in great health. I just didn't know where to start taking care of myself. And then I tried to jump back into the life that I had, that striving, pushing, trying to do everything. And it really failed. And I felt like I was failing, that I was a failure, that I wasn't working hard enough. I wasn't disciplined, that I was just couldn't figure out the right system. And eventually I realized that maybe I wasn't the problem. Maybe it was the approach that was failing me, and that I should try to figure out a different way based on my background and my research background. So that was really why I started. It took me a few years. I know these people who start things when they have infants. That was not me. I needed a couple of years, but then when she was two, I thought, I've been doing some things that have made a big difference. These small shifts that have creating big change. And I wanted to start sharing that. And then the website grew to the podcast, which grew to the book. So that's kind of how I got here.
That's awesome. So I think this is a really interesting thing because I've had authors on from both perspectives, but did someone approach you about writing the book, or did you think, I have this great idea for a book and I'm going to shop the book?
Well, I am an avid reader and I am like a total bookstore nerd, library fanatic. And so my mind, I mean, the idea that I could be an author was beyond my wildest dreams. And so I didn't shop it. I actually was approached through the podcast. So I had been talking about the concepts, the Feel Good Effect, and having a lot of impact on people, including someone who worked at a publisher, a big publisher. And she was like, this is working for me. So let's do this. So it ended up actually going to a different publisher than the one that initially reached out. But that's how it happened. So it was very much like a little kid in a candy store, like your biggest, wildest dream.
Yeah.
To see it. Of course, I haven't seen it in a bookstore, but someday I will. Yeah. And that'll be a good day.
Yeah. When we can actually do that again, that'll be amazing. Mm-hmm.
It will.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that. I think it's so fun when it's like you get that validation of like, yes, not only is this working for people, but they believe in it enough to get it out to the masses. That's a really awesome thing.
Well, I'll tell you another little story, Mackenzie, just along those lines, that it really, you know, when you shop a book, it doesn't mean the publishers are going to be interested. Like you're taking this risk. And one of the top publishers, it went all the, like the editors liked it and the editorial team liked it, but then it went to the top of the publisher and the person in charge just felt like he said it was an anti-wellness book and that he didn't want it. And we could talk about that a little bit because it was kind of crushing, but then I realized how far we have to go because this message of radical simplicity and rest and focusing on what matters and not doing the rest, I think is fundamental, but there are still people that see that as like anti-wellness.
That's crazy.
Or something, I don't know. So it was exciting for me just to say, like, I think that we're shifting. You mentioned that you talk about it here on your show. Mm-hmm. But we're still in the minority of people that believe that there's this different way. And so I was just thrilled to be like part of that movement.
Yeah. Well, I especially because we've been formulating all of our stuff that we're coming out with for, you know, the end of the year and making your goals for New Year's. And that's something that's always kind of a big deal with our Patreon group and kind of what we're bringing. But I have been feeling before I even picked up your book, like this shift of, you know, goal planning in 2020, the way I've done it in the past did not work. Because mm-hmm. there were so many things up in the air. There was so much that I just could not account for, so much survival mode that happened. And I knew that there were shifts that I wanted to make, like I always do, kind of going into a fresh new year, but I wasn't going to be able to go about them the way that I always have. I knew that it was going to have to be a lot more based on the differences in the daily practices that I'm having, more so than looking at this big end goal that I'm trying to achieve. And when I was listening to your book, it was like, yes, this is exactly what you're talking about with the goal flipping and, you know, even just things like multitasking and decision fatigue and all these things that we're going to talk more about, because I just feel like it was so right on and exactly what we're needing to hear as the whole world is on fire. Like we need to take this different approach to enjoying the process. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of jumping ahead here with my notes. I wanted to go like succinctly, but I'm just going to go here because you especially talk about how so many of the times when we have these goals, we hate the process of where we're trying to go. And then this end thing that we're doing or getting to is very short lived. Like you talked about it with running a half marathon. And I would never even try to do that because I'd hate the running of the marathon as well as the getting there. But I thought that was such an interesting perspective. Like, why are we trying to do these things that, you know, the process is the majority of the time that we are doing it? Would you just talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, well, it really is me reimagining goal setting. And that's why I call it goal flipping. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing wrong with wanting results, right? We all want results and that's fine. But what happens, like you said, is that we get really focused on this, what we think the goal outcome is. And we forget that it's the daily habits and actions and mindset that is what it takes to get us there. And so we either don't account for that. We don't ask the questions like, does my life accommodate these habits and actions? Is this going to work? Or do I have the systems and structures in place for this to work? And then we also don't stop to ask ourselves, is there any joy here?
Yeah.
You know? And so, because the idea is like you sacrifice and push and then you like run across the finish line. But what we know from the science and the research is that even if you can like make yourself, discipline yourself into doing it for a certain amount of time, once you reach the goal, you'll stop doing it. And what I'd rather people is that they don't stop, that they keep going, but also that the process, the daily actions and habits, that's your life. And mm-hmm. I want you to feel good in your life. And so it is a fundamental shift in thinking, like you mentioned, but it's very life-giving and very, I feel like a lot of people tell me, validating. Oh, I can just do these little things and that's good enough. That's exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. It allows those daily practices to be the goal.
Yes. And,
but you also talk about how by doing that, it doesn't negate getting somewhere. Like by focusing on that, it actually gets you closer to that big thing that you still want to do, but you're just not focusing on that. The goal is the actual thing that you're doing day in and day out.
Right. And it seems so intuitive when you say that.
Yeah.
But it's, I've been doing this for a long time now.
Yeah.
And I realize that like, it's so radically different than what we've been taught or internalized, mm-hmm. that it's almost hard to believe that that's good, that that's going to work. That if you just say the goal is the practices, you almost feel like, well, I didn't name the thing. And I didn't say I'm going to lose 20 pounds or weight loss is like the number one thing, I think, but it doesn't that sometimes people put on their list. It's not for me, like my focus at all, but let's say it's, I think the top five resolutions are like about eating healthy, going to the gym or working out more, getting out of debt, reading more. There's like five. So I think when we think, well, I'm going to just say that thing. And then that's my goal. And instead saying, well, what would it look like if I want to read more or I want to read 100 books this year or whatever? What does that mean for me? What's the practice?
Yes.
And letting that be where you're putting your energy and your focus.
You guys, 2021 is coming to an end. Can I get an amen? And you know, I've already started thinking about my New Year's resolutions because I love that. And specifically, I'm really thinking about a lot of wellness stuff going into next year. Everything from my eating habits and my fitness to my hydration to the supplements I'm taking and of course the way that I'm taking care of my skin. And I'm also really encouraging goals and fitness and wellness with my kids and making sure they are staying on top of their overall wellness. Because we all want to take better care of ourselves in the new year, and an important part of self-care is taking care of your skin. And that's one of the reasons that I am excited to partner with Apostrophe, especially in helping my son be able to take care of his skin well. Whether you're dealing with breakouts, noticing signs of aging, or looking to even out your skin tone, Apostrophe will help you get that glowing skin in the new year. I know it has worked for my son. We have seen amazing benefits to his acne. It's all but gone. It's amazing to see just how much his skin has transformed since using Apostrophe. So what is Apostrophe? Well, it's a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed oral and topical medications that are clinically proven to help clear acne. Apostrophe connects you with a board-certified dermatologist who will create a personalized treatment plan that is perfectly tailored to your unique skin. You simply fill out Apostrophe's online quiz about your skin goals and medical history, and then snap a few selfies and your dermatologist will create your customized treatment plan. This was like the best part of it for my son because he loved not having to go into an office and just be able to do it all quickly online. Apostrophe also treats all types of acne, from hormonal acne to facial acne and everything in between. They treat breakouts from head to toe. And what I have really loved seeing with my son is Apostrophe has worked so well for him and the process has been so simple that he does it on his own. I don't have to remind him. He's seen the results for himself, and so he really stays on top of it. And anything that I don't have to nag my 15-year-old about, I am on board for. And I have a special deal for my audience. You could save $15 off your first visit with an Apostrophe provider at apostrophe.com/livewell when you use my code LIVEWELL. This code is only available to my listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com/livewell and then click Begin Visit. Then use my code LIVEWELL at sign up and you'll get your first visit for only $5. That's apostrophe.com/livewell and use that code LIVEWELL to get your dermatologist crafted treatment plan for $5. And I just want to thank Apostrophe for sponsoring LIVEWELL Anyway.
Yes. And like you were saying, it's counterintuitive because we always think, I think in our culture, like have your vision board and have that big thing that, you know, keep your eye on the prize. And so it's a very fundamental shift to say like, no, I'm going to focus on this little thing. But you even brought up that football team. I am not a football fan, but I thought it was a really good example.
Well, I can tell you. So if you're not a football fan, Nick Saban is one of the winningest coaches in college football.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he does very differently is that he doesn't gather his team together at the beginning of the season and tell them, like, envision yourself winning the championship. Imagine, you know, holding the trophy. He never talks about winning championships or games or even, you know, the next game. What he talks about over and over is, what do you need to do today in practice? And what do you need to do in the next sequence in practice or the next drill in practice? And the amazing thing is they win games and they win, you know, regionals, and then they win national championships.
Yeah.
And it's just such a great example because it seems like, right, like you said, counterintuitive, but his players become excellent at the things that get them to win games. And yeah. So it's a really, like, it does seem like, oh, of course that's the way, but that's not how we typically do it. And you mentioned vision boards. So imagine for 2020, if instead of making big goals, and if the vision board is such a meme for 2020, right? Like, it's so hilarious, the things that people put that didn't happen. But imagine if we instead for 2020 focused on the daily actions and practices and habits we wanted to cultivate. Then when March hit, you know, and then July, you know, whatever is happening now,
wherever we are,
we could have gone back to that and said, okay, well, maybe I need to tweak my daily practices, but this didn't throw me off all that much. And that's where I want people to get to.
Yes. Yeah. I think especially now we are so needing that, because I think that, you know, mental health is at an all-time low. People are discouraged. And I think so many of us have been existing in survival mode or up and down for so long that we are wanting to say like, okay, even though the world is still in chaos, I want to take back some of that control over my life. And I want to start living well again, instead of just trying to get by from day to day. And it's not a time when we can still have those big end goal types of plans and goals. This is the key right here. It's the changing your mindset and getting really good at the small things that are going to produce that big change over time.
Yes. Yeah. And when you say mindset, it's getting really good at dealing with a day that doesn't go the way that you thought it was going to, and not allowing that to derail you for the rest of the month. And if anything, 2020.
Yeah.
Whatever. Now it's 3. Yeah. I don't know. If anything, this 2020 has taught us that, you know, if you rethink and you reclaim and you go with the small shifts in these daily practices, there will still be so many days where like things just go off the rails, and it's your ability to flow with that and say, this is a normal part of the process. And so when people say like, okay, well, I'm going to do this every single day, whatever the practice is, I say, well, okay, but what happens when you don't? What happens when your kid gets sick, or, you know, your internet goes out, or whatever other weird things happen, like that we can't even imagine, then what happens the next day? And helping people to normalize the missed day, and to know that like daily practice doesn't mean that you do it every single day.
Yeah. I think we so get, I mean, and you talk about this in the book, that kind of all or nothing idea, that it's another one of those shifts that we just have to grapple with in our head. It was really interesting looking at the book from an audio perspective, because I don't have the hard copy, but the whole, I mean, half the book is made up of in the first section, which is all about mindset. And that's really the foundation that you have to get in place in order to let all these other things work.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And I really did that on purpose, because what we tend to do is focus on habits first. And mm-hmm. I'm a huge proponent of habits. That's the one I've been doing research on habit formation for 20 years. But what is often missing is the mindset piece. And it's really what I think keeps people from long-term joyful consistency. And so you mentioned all or nothing thinking, that black or white, on the wagon, off the wagon. You can have a beautiful set of practices and habits, but if you are stuck in that all or nothing loop, when a day go, when you have a bad day, quote unquote bad day, or an off day or an off week or the holidays or whatever it is, that is the thing that derails you, regardless of how well you have established your habits. So when you can lock in the mindset piece, your habits will become so much easier and also so much more sustainable.
Yeah. And I thought you did such a good job in the book of really breaking that down into succinct steps, that because you can say like, change your mindset. Like, oh, okay, thanks. You know, but you really broke it down into, well, this is what that looks like to actually train your brain to think in a different way.
Right. It is neuroscience. So, and again, like that, some of my background's in neuroscience, but I wanted to present it in a way that was really attainable and accessible to people and not like tell you all the nitty gritty about brains. But mindset gets used so often, as you know, Mackenzie, like it's thrown around all the time, and it's used for a lot of different, it means different things to different people. But I think I try to present like a pretty science-backed definition, just so that you could understand that the way that your brain processes information is through a result of how you were born, but also the thoughts you've practiced thinking. And the amazing thing is that you can change the thoughts that you think. And regardless of your situation that you're in, and when you change the thoughts that you think, you get different actions, different habits, and then different results. So it's just about empowering people to know that if you keep ending up falling into old ways, it might not be so much the habits, it might be more about the mindset for you.
Yeah. Okay. Because this has come up a couple of times now, and I really do want to make sure that we mention it, because I think that your book is different than a lot of other books that I've read on goals. I mean, a lot of them have some sort of research behind them, but you could really tell that you put in the work and you looked at this from a lot of different, like, legitimate perspectives, like science-based perspectives for how our brains work and how habits are developed and all that kind of thing. Would you just talk for a second about the research that you put into developing this book?
Yeah. So it's a combination of a couple of things. It's psychology and a couple of fields of psychology, cognitive behavior therapy, which really focuses on reframing thoughts. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of research behind that. So it's not woo, and it's not like positive think your way out of this. It's really about tactical things that you can do to change your brain. So I drew a lot on that kind of repatterning. And then also just basic neuroscience on how our brains work for that first part. And then also all the field of mindfulness. So, but in a way, because most of my friends don't want to pick up a book and read, you know, 50 books on neuroscience and different psychology, you know, approaches and mindfulness. So I said, okay, let's take this and just put it into really, really simple terms. And then the second part is the work that I've done in behavior change. So how people form and maintain and keep habits. And so some of that, like you mentioned, like how people make decisions and decision fatigue and all of these things really comes down to what is keep as normal human people. And for me, I'm a mom.
Yeah.
What is really standing in my way? Because even back when I mentioned when my daughter was born, I kind of knew what to do. I just wasn't doing it.
Yeah.
Or wasn't doing it consistently. And that's always been the heart of what my work is, like, well, why? Why? Because sometimes we think it's because we're not good enough. We're not disciplined. We are a failure. And that's not why.
Yeah.
But there's these other things, and I wanted to put them in one place so you could understand, like, oh, I know what to do. I'm not doing it because of this, and here's a way through that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so that's all my background.
Yeah.
That's all the science.
I love that. I think that is so impactful, and it really makes the book all that more legit, because you're like, oh, mm-hmm. thank you for distilling all of this technical information down for me and then putting it into a format where I can just take it and use it, which is so helpful for anybody. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got so much on their plates. I think you've made a really usable book, which is so just beneficial to everybody.
Ladies, let's take just a second to talk about the number one thing that can help you this Christmas season, the number one thing that can help you in the new year, and that is plan to eat. You guys, I know that when I have our meals planned, it's the top thing that will help me have less stress in my life. And as I'm going into the holidays and trying to prep for all of that food that comes with the holiday season, and then also as I'm going into the new year and really wanting to be on top of things, knowing that I've got my meals planned and all of that squared away is the number one thing that I can do to help me be on my game. And I know it can be for you too. It is such a simple system. Once you get all of your recipes in there that actually work for your family, and it's super easy to do because they have a really handy web clipper tool that allows you to just download everything right off the internet. You could get your recipes in there and then just drag and drop your meal plans. Then once you get that down, you can make menus. You can make a queue for what's in your freezer and things your family is interested in trying for the first time, and you can rate your meals, and you could do so many things. But really, if all you want to do is just simply plan, get those recipes in there, drag and drop, and then every time you go to the grocery store, you've got your shopping list right there on your phone. They've really just thought of everything. This is the number one thing you can do to simplify your life this holiday season and into the new year. So go to plantoeat.com/livewell, and you can get 60 days free. Just get in there, get your feet wet, give it a try. If you have any questions, let me know, and I can help you along the way too, because I know that once you get in there, it's going to make such a difference to your life. So again, go to plantoeat.com/livewell. You could get 2 months completely free without even putting in your credit card. Then after that, if you're like, yes, this is amazing, I want to sign up, you could pay for a whole year for just $39 for the entire year, or you could pay month to month for just $4.95. It's less than a cup of coffee, and it's going to revolutionize the way you run your life. Go to plantoeat.com/livewell and get those first 2 months free.
But I really liked, you kind of hit on it again, that whole idea of decision fatigue and multitasking. And I have talked about this, like how our brains actually get tired and get taxed. Mm-hmm. And that has an impact on your body as well. And you talk about that. And I thought it was so interesting the way you went into that about how even having to switch our focus actually uses more mental energy. Would you just go into that whole thing for a minute? Because I thought it was so interesting.
So I call it the fatigue formula. And the fatigue formula is simply the number of decisions you make in a day plus the number of times you switch your focus. So multitasking. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with those things. But what we need to know is that when you make a lot of decisions, it's called decision fatigue. And when you make a lot of, when you switch between tasks, multitasking, that adds up to a drain on your mental energy, which then drains your willpower.
Yeah.
And so think of it like a battery on your phone. Some apps use a lot of your battery, like my map app. If I have that open on a drive, my battery gets super drained. Well, like that map app is a lot like just making decisions. So by 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you might find that your willpower is drained and you've beat yourself up about it. It's probably more about the number of decisions you've made in the day and the number of times you've had to task switch versus like you just not having willpower. And I find that's really important too for caregivers to understand. So if you happen to be a parent mm-hmm. or a caregiver of any kind, you're making more decisions and likely yeah. task switching a lot.
Yes.
And there's something like, I'm just laughing because today's been one of those days. We're still in online school here where I am. So I'm so exhausted right now. It's like 1:30 in the afternoon and for me, and I'm like, why am I so tired? Oh, because I've been interrupted 90,000 times so far today.
Yeah.
It's like, one, it's just empowering you with that knowledge that there's a reason you might feel that way. And then also giving you some ideas of what to do about it. Some of that we have control over and some of it we don't, but just so that you know, like this is real. This is very real.
Yeah.
It's very, very cognitively taxing. And that's why I call it the fatigue formula, because if you're feeling that way, this might be one reason.
Yeah. Well, and I think, again, I mean, 2020 keeps coming up, but it's a real thing, especially for those of us who are still virtually schooling our kids. You know, I had been counting down to this fall. I remember thinking last February, okay, I've got 6 months until my youngest kid goes to kindergarten. And then I'm like home free. I can, you know, work all day without interruptions and it's going to be glorious. And I just can't even imagine what it's going to be like. And then September came and she didn't go back to school. And now she actually is in school, but I've got two other kids who are home. And it's like, what happened? I mean, even this morning I was getting ready for this interview and I'm really focusing on like getting all my questions together and everything. And we set up our house with Echo Dots. And so my kids, they drop in on my room all the time. And I get this drop in from my daughter. She's like, can you please come here for a second? Okay. You know, I go in there. I have a dot on my hand. Really? Really? Okay. Yeah. Thank you for letting me know. But I mean, it is those little things that they get taxing on you. And so I think all of the ways that we can eliminate decision fatigue, we need to more than ever.
We do. And I feel like it's like a 50-50 split for me where 50% of the time I do. So the antidote to decision fatigue and task switching to the fatigue formula is what I call decision templates and single tasking zones. So you either make decisions ahead of time or you create these like pockets where you can be focused. And I think in my reality, I use those about half the time. And then the other half the time, I just say like, wow, this is just, I'm just getting interrupted so much that I just need to lean into that and not even beat myself up for the fact that I'm not getting anything done today. And that today for me is the second half of the today, the 50% of being like, okay, today is not a day where I get a lot done. Yeah. And it's not because I didn't have a good decision template or because I didn't have my day planned out well. It's because my daughter needs a lot of help with writing today and my husband's on calls and this is what's happening. So it's like this, it's knowledge is power. Like just knowing sometimes it's good. Mm-hmm. And then the other half is like, sometimes you can take action and make your life easier. And that's where some of the techniques in the book come in.
Well, and that also goes back to the mindset part, because you specifically talk about, and I'm not going to use the right word with this, but.
Oh, satisficing. Is that what you're talking about? Or something else.
I'm going to get there, but I think it was more the, like having grace with yourself.
Oh, yeah. Gentle is the new perfect.
Yes. Like allowing, like not beating yourself up over those things. And that was part of that mindset thing. And I think that is so important. You know, I have a friend who is going through a really difficult time right now and having a bunch of upheaval in their life and really tough things happening. And I have to keep reminding them, like, seriously, let up on yourself, because look at all you have done. Let's celebrate that for a minute, because you've done amazing things and maybe not everything is falling into place, but look at what you have done, because that's pretty incredible.
I'm so glad you say that. And I shared a story on my Instagram a couple of weeks ago. At the beginning of the year, I put all of my daughter's no school days on my calendar, even though she's in virtual school. You know, I'm like, okay, here's all the days. I'm really so organized. Good for me. And at some point, either they changed the schedule slightly or it's possible I looked at the wrong version. At any rate, I had told her all week, like, you don't have school on Friday. You can sleep in. You don't to get up, blah, blah, blah. So that Friday, she like sleeps in and she's on the couch, like in her jammies reading. And we happened to check on something in her school Chromebook, and it was a school day. And like, not only had I, you know, not only had she missed it, but I had actively told her it wasn't a school day.
Yeah.
And she had a meltdown and it was really upset. And I got her on there, and then I went on Instagram. I'm like, just by the way, I told my daughter there was no school day, and someone was like, well, you should get her a calendar and a blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, this wasn't about her. She has an alarm and a calendar. I told her I wasn't school today.
Yeah.
But what else I said was, I don't feel bad about this. I don't feel guilty. I mean, I'm sorry to my daughter, but I also told her, like, she's like, how could you do this? And I said, what do you mean? Of course, how could I do this? Do you know how much I'm trying to keep together for our family? Yeah. Of course I didn't know that it was. And I tell people, like, this is an impossible situation. It's impossible. That's it. And so if it's impossible for you too, that means you're normal, and gentle is the new perfect. And like, I don't feel bad about it, and neither should you.
Everybody gets a permission slip to not feel bad about things, because we're all doing the best we can.
Yeah. Right.
And look at all you have done. I mean, you put it on the calendar. That in itself, like, way to go.
I was like, I planned. I know. Yes. And I explained to her, because I feel like as a parent, it's really important for me to instill gentle is the new perfect for her. I said, look, mommy is doing the best I can. I'm working full time. I'm helping you. I'm helping daddy. I'm getting all the food on the table. Like, of course I messed up. I made a mistake, because it's really, I'm doing the best I can. And I think modeling that for her to say, of course I made a mistake. How could I not? And that's, you know, I apologize for it when it's something that I can apologize for, but I also don't, I think it's that act of like being so hard on yourself, like your friend. I know so many people like that. And I say, gosh, of course, like, look at everything you're doing.
Yeah.
Give yourself a little credit for that. And let the little thing, those slip ups, let them go.
Yeah. And teaching our kids to not let those things totally derail you either. Like, accepting that they happen, and you can still pick up and move forward.
Yep. And we ended up finishing the day, because it was online. We were able to get the rest of the material, and she finished the day. So it was a good lesson for her too. Like, it's okay. Something went wrong, and let's fix it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's oftentimes easier for us to see in other people than it is to see in ourselves. But it's so important that we actively try to build that muscle for us and our kids. But you also brought up, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the self-compassion piece that's really built into the book, you touched on it so well, that we're actually able to show others in our inner circle compassion at a much higher rate than ourselves. So if you find yourself in that sort of beating yourself up moment or guilt moment, ask yourself, what would I say to a child or a dear friend?
Yeah.
And it was amazing when I shared that on Instagram, majority of people were like, oh, they thought it was funny. And they were like, that's not a big deal. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be amazing if every person that sent me a note saying no big deal, or you're doing a great job, would say that to themselves the next time that something went off, like a little bit wrong. And what a powerful shift that would be if you talk to yourself the way that you would talk to a friend.
Yeah.
All right, ladies, let's take a couple of minutes to talk about hormones. One of our favorite subjects, right? I know. It can be a real bummer, because we have a lot of hormonal fluctuations in our life. Everything from our cycle that spans 28 days, unlike a man whose hormones recycle every 24 hours, we've got constant fluctuations, and also throughout our life with premenopause and menopause and everything, and it can really wear on our systems and our bodies and our brains. things. And sometimes you just want a solution that helps you to be able to kind of regulate everything out and not have a bunch of hormones that you're taking. And that's why I want to tell you about Bonafide, a new sponsor of the podcast. Basically, Bonafide is a company providing natural solutions for perfectly natural symptoms. Bonafide was created to give women an alternative to effectively relieve the symptoms that accompany hormonal fluctuations within their body, because every woman deserves relief without compromise. Bonafide has a gamut of products that you can choose from, dealing with all kinds of symptoms, from vaginal dryness to menopausal hot flashes and night sweats, vaginal itching and discharge and PMS. I mean, let's just be real about it. These are things that women deal with. We shouldn't have to feel ashamed about it, and we should be able to access resources that are actually going to help. And Bonafide has done the work. The ingredients in every Bonafide product are the result of thorough research, development, and clinical trials, resulting in every product being scientifically validated. Safety is their top priority. All products are made with safe yet powerful ingredients that are completely free from hormones and without alarming side effects. And their products are recommended by over 8,100 doctors across the country. Over 33,000 women have used Bonafide products and found help from them because they are just that good. It's a non-prescription solution that treats women's health issues using ingredients from nature as often as they possibly can to maximize the effectiveness and relief. And they're constantly coming out with new products. So give Bonafide a try today. No hormones and no prescription required. Real relief without compromise. To get 20% off your first purchase when you subscribe to any product, go to hellobonafide.com and use my promo code LIVEWELL. That's hello, BONAFIDE.com and code LIVEWELL. That's LIVEWELL for 20% off at checkout. And you can also find this link in today's show notes. Thank you to Bonafide for sponsoring Live Well Anyway. And it is hard. I know that's been something I have really been working on and learning this year, because I know I am my biggest critic and the person who gets down on myself the absolute most. And to actually have to like consciously make the effort this year about certain things that have happened in my life to say, okay, I'm going to think positively about myself or affirm myself in this. I always thought like, oh, mantras or like telling yourself, you're doing a good job. Like, I hate that stuff. It's like, oh, that's such a joke. Like, just get with it and get your job done. And like, you know, like I always felt like a fake. Like, I'm not going to put a post-it note on my mirror saying like, you're wonderful. Like, that's so dumb. No, I'm trying to work to, you know, whatever. But to actually, like, I journaled at one point this year and I actually told a friend, I said, this is a breakthrough moment for me. I said in my journal, like, you did a good job at this. Like, that's so hard for me to say, but it helped me to not get stuck in the frustrations of the things that I know I wasn't doing as well at. And we've got to learn to do that.
Well, thank you for your vulnerability and sharing that, because I think that's very common. I was the same way. I'm the biggest skeptic of all times. And I was like, oh, please. Like self-compassion, yeah. No.
Yeah.
Self-kindness, pass. Like, that's ridiculous. I don't even know what you're talking about. So one of the things that changed my mind was the over 1,000 articles, science-based research articles on self-compassion and how people who practice self-compassion are, one, they actually have better immune systems.
Yeah.
Two, they are more they're more productive. Three, they are able to recover when something goes wrong more quickly. And four, they are not, I would say, better caregivers. That compassion actually has been shown to resonate to the people around you for real, not just woo, but like actually comes through. And so I thought, well, why am I ignoring this? This seems like magic. You know, medicine, and I'm not taking advantage of it, and it's free. So why don't I try it? And I think I wrote in the book that, you know, gentle is the new perfect. The self-compassion has been like a balm to my inner critic, and that I felt stupid doing it for a long time until it really started to make a difference. And then I was like, oh, okay. And it doesn't mean I'm with you, Mackenzie. I still am very quick to like self-criticism and not feeling like I'm doing it good enough. But now my response is very quick with the compassion. And that's made a really big difference in my life. And I think in those for those people around me as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's so interesting, like you were saying, it's like a lot of the stuff we have been talking about today. It's so counterintuitive that by being compassionate with your shortcomings and where you maybe didn't make it as well as you wanted to, or whatever it is, you actually allow yourself to be a more productive person because you don't get stuck just being frustrated over what you haven't done. And I mean, I think there's probably a lot of different aspects to it that I'm not doing justice to, but I just think that's so interesting because I think a lot of times the number one reason I feel like I have to be critical of myself is so that I can get more done and I can be more productive and I can make things happen. And it's actually the opposite that is true.
It's true. And I think it helps if that you're so great, Mackenzie, that you're noticing that. That's the first step, is actually noticing. I think it's upsetting when you first start noticing. For me, I was like, wow, I am really kind of an awful person to myself.
Yeah.
But then identify the lie that it is. Like, I am telling myself that if I'm horrible or beat myself up or tell myself I suck or whatever your version is, that that's going to make me get this done or do it better. And that's not true.
Yeah.
And what would happen if I tried something else? And I find too, for parents, that sometimes just telling them, like, would you want your child, is this what you want your child to grow up doing?
Yeah.
Is this what you want them to believe is the best way to accomplish what they want to accomplish? And my guess is no.
Yeah.
So if you can learn a different way, you can model that for your kids.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was really interesting. You probably don't know my backstory, but 3 years ago, I had to leave an abusive marriage and all of this stuff. And so we lived with my parents for almost a year and a half before we were able to get our own place. And it only became clear to me just how much I was doing that to myself. And even verbalizing those things, my mom would be like, stop that negative self-talk. Like, that's not getting you anywhere. And at the time, I would just say, no, it's not negative self-talk. I'm being realistic. Like, I'm saying what the real thing is, you know? And it was in counseling and even, you know, more recently, probably this summer with a friend, when I said something and they said, but is that really true? Like, look at the brass tacks of it. Let's look at proof of whether or not that thing is true about you. Okay, look at all these things that disprove what you just said. Okay, so that's not true, so don't say it. And it took them kind of like having to break it down to the actual pieces and like, look at this proof in your life that says that thing is not accurate, that made me actually have to say, like, oh, maybe these things that I'm saying about myself are more extreme than what is the truth. And that is more damaging than it is good.
I love that you said that because I think, well, again, for your vulnerability to be honest about that. And also because I think that you really got it, which is most people don't frame it as negative self-talk. They frame it as being a realist.
Yeah.
And that's usually a combination of factors and possibly, you know, being in an abusive relationship, being raised by people that were incredibly hard on you. There's a number of factors that might make you convinced that that's the only way and the necessary way. Mm-hmm. But I always just invite people to know that there is a lot of research that should suggest that there is another option, and that, you have the power to rewire and to change that if you want, if you still want to. But the first step is to say, like, is this true? Is this the only way I can view this? That can take a little bit of work. Yeah.
Yeah, it really can. And sometimes, you know, maybe you need that outside help of somebody else to kind of help you sift through that. I know that was a game changer for me, but it really does make such a difference when you can ask that question and truly answer, like, is this true? And it really makes a big difference. So, but I did want to bring up this word because you brought it up a little while ago, and I want to hit on it because I think it is another big piece, and that's satisfying. And you can go into like what that actually means, but I think it's so important that we learn how to do this well.
Well, so satisfice is a real word, and it came, it's from an economist and a political scientist who won the Nobel Prize for economics many years ago. And he was studying how part of economics is studying choice. So how people make decisions. Mm-hmm. And there was this whole field in economics called in political science called rational choice, that people make rational decisions. We know that's not true now, but that was kind of the whole field. And what his kind of contribution that won him the Nobel Prize was this idea that people can either make perfect decisions in a simple world, or they can make imperfect decisions in a complex world. But it can't be both. It has to be one or the other. And since we don't live in a simple world,
yeah,
we have to make imperfect decisions. And he calls that, he called it satisficing. Now, is that the best word to use? I don't know, but I think it's funny. So it's like a combination of satisfactory, I think. And so anyway, my point in telling you that is that I think we get stuck with this idea that we can make a perfect decision, mm-hmm. but with this idea that it's like a simple world. But when we are in this complex world where everything has these like multitude of consequences, we actually do much better when we accept that any choice we make, any decision we make is going to be imperfect. There's going mm-hmm. to be trade-offs. And I think that that's been one of the most fascinating things about this year of many for me, is watching people try to make decisions who are what the psychologists are called optimizers. So optimizers are always trying to make a perfect decision, mm-hmm. and it takes them a lot of mental energy. So let's say you're trying to find the perfect pair of shoes. You go and if you're an optimizer, you're looking and looking and looking and looking and trying to find the perfect pair of shoes. Whereas a satisficer is like, okay, I need, you know, here's the three things I need in a shoe. I look at a couple places, boom, those are good enough. And you pick mm-hmm. that. But what we know from the research is that the satisficer is happier, even though the optimizer took way more time and more thought. They're less happy with their decision in the long term than the satisficer. And so if we can start thinking about the fact that no decision we make is going to be perfect, there are always going to be trade-offs, that we just need to look at what the trade-offs are rather than trying to make the perfect decision, we'll save yeah. so much time, mental energy, and effort.
Yes. All right, ladies, get ready for the ultimate winter night in, brought to you by Beam. Beam is a functional wellness brand that makes products for sleep, calm, focus, recovery, and hydration. For a limited time only, Beam's best-selling sleep product, Dream Powder Hot Cocoa, now comes in a delicious white chocolate peppermint. Believe me, I've tried it. It's amazing. I mean, get ready for swirls of peppermint mixed with creamy white chocolate for the guilt-free hot cocoa of your holiday dreams. It's the perfect winter wind down for those cold, snowy nights. It's triple lab tested and contains the ultimate sleep promoting ingredients: nano CBD, reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, and melatonin, and no added sugar or artificial sweeteners. Curl up with a guilt-free cup of white chocolate peppermint dream right before bedtime and get your best sleep ever. I especially lately have really been dealing with a lot of insomnia. Again, it comes and goes. It's been all my life. And sometimes it feels like just nothing will work. I've tried melatonin on its own. I've tried all kinds of sleep machines and different things. And sometimes it just feels like there's nothing that is going to help me. But lately, I have been using Dream in the white chocolate peppermint. Oh my goodness. What a difference. Not only is it just a fun way to be able to relax at night, it's a nice, warm, yummy drink to be having while I'm watching a show or I'm taking a bath, but then it truly just helps me completely wind down. It helps me to stop my brain from racing, and I'm able to fully fall asleep and stay asleep, because a lot of times on other products, I would end up waking up halfway through the night. But with this, it really helps me to stay asleep and actually feel refreshed in the morning instead of feeling groggy.
White chocolate peppermint dream powder only lasts for a limited time, so get it while it's hot. And there's great news. For a limited time, if you subscribe to any Beam product, you can also take advantage of their best sale of the year for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. You'll get 40% off the first 3 months of any subscription, plus a free mug and frother, or 20% off any one-time purchase. Again, this is Beam's biggest offer of the year, and it won't last long. Head to beamorganics.com/livewell. That's B-E-A-M organics.com/LIVEWELL for 40% off the first 3 months of any Beam subscription, plus a free mug and frother, or 20% off any one-time purchase. Subscriptions are month-to-month and can be paused or canceled at any time. Thank you to Beam for sponsoring Live Well Anyway. Yeah, I think I tend to be a little bit more of an automatic satisficer than some people. I mean, I think it's different about, I mean, there's probably certain areas of my life that I'm more like trying to look for the perfect thing than others. But I think in general, my personality is more like, okay, just, yep, that works. I'm going to go with that. Or my mom says like, get that pair of shoes. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But I definitely know people who just get stuck in that cycle of almost like a perfectionism of, but wait, I've got to get it right. And I've got to find the perfect decision. And then you end up not making any moves at all, which just ends up being more frustrating in the long run.
Yes. And it shows up everywhere. So shopping, you know, the wedding dress is like such a great example. Like I went to three stores. I tried on, you know, five dresses at each store. The first dress I tried on, I liked the most. And I was like, okay, I could go to 10 more stores, or I could keep going back and trying on. But I was like, did I like that dress?
Yeah.
Was it good enough? Yes. Okay. And I was married almost 20 years ago, and I fully like that dress was not the main part of that day anyway. And I loved it, and it was beautiful. But it shows up for people across the board. So let's say you are someone who posts to Instagram as part of your job. You know, an optimizer gets so stuck in trying to make the, you know, perfect grid and say the perfect thing that they don't post at all.
Yeah.
And their message, their important message for the world, doesn't get out, you know, or they try to decide about going back to school or starting a new passion project, and they get so bogged down in deciding that they don't take a step forward. And so the cool thing is, so some of us are more naturally satisficers.
See, that is where I'm probably the optimizer. You hit that. Like shopping, not so much. Like I'll take on a new project, but then taking that next step, like, oh, wait, now I got to figure it out. I'm currently optimizing in my life. I need to satisfy.
So that's, Mackenzie, you're so self-aware. I love it that you can be an optimizer in one area and a satisficer in another. And the cool thing is that it's not a personality trait. It's just a way of thinking. So you can change it. So if it's not serving you, that's what I always tell people. This isn't about like labeling, shaming, blaming. It's just saying like, if this isn't serving you, there are other ways, and you could try this other way, which is really just, if you feel stuck in a decision, or you feel stuck in taking action, like literally write out a trade-offs list. If I do this, what happens? If I don't do it, what happens? And then also, what happens if I do something in the middle, you know?
Yeah.
If it's not the two extremes. And then weigh the trade-offs. What matters to you most right now? And that brings up another part of the book, is the should to good. There's so many ways we could, if anything, I put a lot in the book. So it's very short, but there's a lot you could take from it.
Yeah.
And that should to good piece is just, if you look at that trade-off list or any other part of your life and you ask yourself, you know, which thing matters most, you could ask yourself, is this a should, something I think I should do? Or is it a good, something that would be, you know, good for me, good for the people around me?
Yeah.
Good for my community. And then that's the one you go with.
Mm-hmm. That's so helpful. I can't wait to get the hard copy of this book because, and you say this, I think even in the beginning of the book, you want it to be kind of like a manual for people to keep coming back to time and time again. And it was so great to listen to, but I really did that for the purpose of preparing for the interview, not changing my life. And now I want to go back
back and like actually dig through it and do the work of it, because I think that this is one of the most impactful, like, habit forming, life altering things that I like, books that I've read, people I've had on the show. I really resonate with your book. I just think you've done a fabulous job, and I can't wait to dig into it more.
Oh, thank you. That really means a lot. That was my intention with it. And it's like this, it is a small, my contribution, my small shift, because if we can collectively, I mean, imagine, Mackenzie, like all of these people learning a little more self-kindness and mm-hmm. learning to not, that the being hard on yourself isn't the being a realist.
Yeah.
And that they can focus on the daily practices. What would that do for our communities? And what would that do for our kids? And what would that do for our world? And it is small, but it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love that. I am so glad that you played your part and you've created this resource, because I just think that it is so good and so helpful. And I can't wait for people to listen to this episode, but then get their hands on it and make those differences in their life. For sure.
Thank you.
The perfect time of year for it too. Like, everybody's thinking about it. So get the book, guys. Ask for it for Christmas. It's well worth it.
It's like under $15. So yes. it's a small investment for something that you can have for a long time, and I hope use for a long time.
And it's really pretty too. I'll say that.
It is.
It's a very pretty book.
We did. I feel like I had done all this reading and research, and I just wanted something that you could gift or that you could put on your nightstand or your morning routine, and that you picked it up and you felt good holding it. And so I hope that came across.
It did. It did. Well done. Okay. We are going to shift gears a little bit here, heading in towards the end of the show. But what does a typical day look like for you?
Well, right now, I have one daughter, so she's 8 and a half, actually almost 9. So I have an almost 9-year-old, and then my husband, and we all work here at our house every day, all day. We never go anywhere. So, I have
2020.
Yep. And our dog. So I get up and I do have a morning routine, but I kind of, it's more about those practices that you mentioned mm-hmm. versus like doing it at a certain time, because I need to be a little more flexible.
Yeah.
So it's helping her get ready and get on her school call. And then within that time frame, I have a few little practices that I do related to like some of those practices in the book around mindset. So maybe a little journaling. I drink a big glass of water. I try to stand outside, even though I live in a very northern part of the country, to get some light on my face for circadian rhythm and just get through the winter. And then I'll do like a 20-minute, I call them exercise snacks. Not eating while working out, but actually small bursts of movement through the day.
So I saw this on your Instagram today.
So I'm like, exercise snack. So I'll do like a little mat workout or jump on the bike or whatever, shower. And then, I try to work. it goes well some days and not others.
I hear you.
Yeah. And then I do a couple like mini wellness breaks through even now. So instead of trying to put all the emphasis on a morning routine as a mom that wasn't working. So I do a shorter one, and then maybe mid morning, mid afternoon and evening, I'll inject maybe like 5 minutes of just drinking my tea in silence, even if that's like in a closet or whatever it has to be, or going on a walk or listening to a podcast. And, so just having those anchors is really, helpful. And then I'm the dinner maker, my husband's the dishes doer, and then reading, maybe watching a show. And it's very, very like Groundhog Day at the moment, but all the more reason to have those practices, because they keep me in that daily habit of taking care of myself and then being able to do the things that matter to me.
Yeah, I love that. And so I think you probably kind of answered it, but I always ask on the show, like, what is one little way that you are living well anyway, doing something for like pleasure or taking care of yourself? Is there something else, or do you think it would just kind of be those practices?
Yeah, I call it like my 4R daily routine. So it's just like revive, reset, rest through the day. That's been huge because it allowed me to let go of the idea that I had to do anything for 1 hour and allowed it to be more intentional practices that make me feel good, that kind of weave through the day and aren't necessarily at an exact time. So that has really helped me live well anyway in this year. And sometimes just literally going for a 5-minute walk, or like while listening to a podcast, or I'm a huge proponent of just sitting and drinking something, tea, coffee, water, whatever is your drink of choice, and just think like in silence, without scrolling. It's those little ways that I remind myself, like, I'm worthy of care. That adds up to a lot at the end of the week and the end of the year and the end of the life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we, especially in a year like this, have gotten ourselves so used to distracting ourselves so that we don't have to think about like what is actually happening in our lives. And even this morning, like, I have an Echo Dot in my bathroom, and a lot of times I'll listen to music or a podcast or whatever, or watch a YouTube video while I'm getting ready. And I kept wanting to jump to those things, but I also knew that I needed to think about things and I needed to be brainstorming ideas. And I was blown away by just not distracting myself or talking to a friend on Marco Polo or whatever it was while I was doing my makeup. I just didn't do any of that. And I came up with so many great ideas by the time I was done. It's like, wow, look what happens when I just like quiet everything around me and actually allow myself to think. It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Well, it's so many reasons, like you mentioned, this year, especially, like, you know, there was a reason to always to be on our phones for various times. And then like, it might be the way that you feel like you get a break from the people around you or your children. But like, if you can find a little bit of space for silence, whether it's in the shower without something on, or whether it's taking your cup of coffee and like finding a place. I'm not kidding about the closet. I'm also huge on what I call carcation, which is just sitting in your car. In the driveway with your coffee or your tea or whatever. Another thing I love to do is legs up the wall, which is just a yoga pose where you lay on the floor and you put your legs up the wall. That's the yoga pose. That's super good for like anxiety reduction, lymphatic drainage, and it kind of forces you for stillness for a few moments. But cultivating those things on a regular basis most days creates this like web of wellness through your day. That really, it's like the culmination of everything we've talked about. It's all these small shifts that add up to really big change.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I feel like I could keep talking about it for another hour, but I will wrap things up with my stock questions. Are you ready?
Oh gosh. Yes. I'm notoriously bad at these, but yes.
Oh, go ahead. You'll be fine. Okay. Candles or essential oil diffuser?
Diffuser.
Okay. Cloth napkins or paper?
Cloth.
City or country?
Oh, right now country.
Okay. Paper or digital?
Paper.
For shopping, we don't really have much of an option anymore. But if you were to be able to choose, would you rather do it online or in the store?
In the store. Okay. I really like, miss going in stores.
Everybody now is like, even if I would have said online before, now I just want to be in a store.
I just want to touch the things and not like, you know, talking about decision fatigue, I'm like, it used to be going in a store, I could just look at stuff and put it, take it to the person and I could buy it. Now it's like 12,000 decisions, 100,000 items, like set up your account. And I'm just like, this is no fun. So please, yep, stores, don't go away.
Yeah.
We would like you to be pure when this is over.
Yes. Don't just come, yeah, become, sure, warehouses that deliver, although those can be nice sometimes, right, you know, there is
sometimes
something like, I'm actually in a place with people and looking at things that I want to buy. Okay.
For sure.
Yeah. It's 4 o'clock or whatever time you're making dinner and you need a mental break. Do you listen to a podcast or music?
Podcast.
And what are some of your favorite podcasts?
Oh gosh. Lately I've been listening to Good Ancestor. I love that one. I love the Brené Brown podcast. And I actually, this is really bizarre, but I do listen to my own podcast because I love to hear, a lot of times I love to listen to my guests because they're, mm-hmm, amazing. And I, when you're, as you know, Mackenzie, yeah, when you're interviewing, it's different than just being a listener. Totally. And I also just listen because I really like to, in a non-judgmental way, I love to listen and hear how I can become a better interviewer. So I do listen to my own.
I never listen to my own.
I find that's true for most people. And I think,
yeah,
I had to get past the, you know, I hate my voice and all these self-critical things. But I, yeah, found that over time, listening has been probably the best action to become, yeah, better, because, yeah, every time I listen, I go, I could have, you know, that question didn't land or whatever it was, but I can do it in a way now. It took a lot of practice where I don't just rip myself apart, yeah, and that's a practice on its own. So yeah, I love listening. And then I do Vox too with friends, which is just a voicemail, yeah, app. So that's a lot of times what I do first before podcasting is catch up with friends.
Yes. That and Marco Polo is what I do. We do a lot of video. It's kind of like Vox or only video.
Love it.
Okay. Chocolate, milk or dark?
Dark.
Sports or no sports?
Sports.
If you could choose between live broadcasting or watching someone else do it, which would you rather?
Like if I
like
was watching
Insta stories or doing a live or something, would you rather watch somebody else do a live or would you rather be the one doing it?
I'd rather do it with somebody.
Okay.
Split the difference.
Okay.
Split the difference. Yes. Yeah.
What is your favorite movie?
Oh, gosh. I cannot answer favorite anythings, but I can tell you that right now for Christmas, it's Elf and Christmas Vacation.
All right. I totally support both of those answers, especially Christmas Vacation. That was always like our go-to movie. And it wasn't even until I got older that I realized, oh, my gosh, Mom, like, Dad, this has like a lot of stuff in it.
But oh, it's super inappropriate.
The thing. Yeah. It was always the thing we watched. Yeah.
Yes. And we let our daughter watch it starting a couple of years ago. I'm like, yeah, this is wildly inappropriate, but she, yeah, thinks it's so funny and she doesn't really get all of the other stuff.
Yes,
yet, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I also agree about the having trouble picking a favorite. This is just like a total side story. My daughter last week, she told me, okay, Mom, I want to interview you. Cause she knows I interview people all the time. She's like, well, what's your favorite, mm-hmm, color? I said, well, it depends. Like it changes.
Right.
Yes. And she's like, what's your favorite food? I said, well, it changes. And then she, right, said, who's your favorite kid? And I was like, well, it changes.
I know. I can't answer favorite, but it depends. I can tell you my favorite Christmas, yes, movie. So there we go.
That was a good one. Okay. And final question. If you were to put yourself on the crunchiness spectrum where 0 is totally not crunchy and 10 is like singing Kumbaya by the fire with your legs unshaven and dreadlocks in your hair, where would you be on the spectrum?
6. Right. I grew up in a Boulder, Colorado, okay, which is a 10. And, yes, then I grew up in Eugene, Oregon, which,
oh,
is a 10.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
So I know the tens. And so I would say I'm, yeah, a 6 compared to real tens, but maybe, yes, if I was in the Midwest, I would be like a 9. So
yes, it definitely, your perspective matters. For sure.
Right.
For sure.
I would say I lean crunchy, but yes. I also lean science. So I like to be right there in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to college in Missoula, Montana. Same kind of thing. Okay. It's a 10, mm-hmm. you know? And so I know comparatively, but then I know according to normal people what I am. So
right.
I get that.
Right. Yep. If I go like upstate New York where my husband's from, I'm like a 9 when I'm there. But if I'm in Portland right now, I'm in Portland. I live in Portland. Okay. I'm like a 3. Yeah. So
yes. In
Portland, I'm a 3.
Yes.
So.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, it has been so wonderful talking to you and getting to pick your brain a little bit. And especially after listening to you for the last couple of days, getting to actually talk about all of this with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right, everybody, that's it for this episode of Live Well Anyway. Of course, you can find the show notes in whatever app you are listening to the podcast on. Just swipe up to see those. If you haven't subscribed yet or left a review, I would so appreciate if you would do both. And if you want to see more of the show notes or other recommendations that I have or anything else, you can always find me over at mackenziekoppa.com. That's where we've got the rest of the show notes, the blog, all of the links that you could possibly be looking for. We would love for you to come check it out. And also, while you're over there, subscribe to my newsletter, which you can also find at mackenziekoppa.substack.com. All right, ladies, thank you so much for joining me today on this episode. I hope that you enjoyed everything that Robin had to say. I know I always get filled up from listening to her. And if you haven't checked out her book yet, be sure to do so. It is the perfect read for going into the new year. Okay, ladies, until next week when Katie Duckett and I will be back talking about our favorite reads of the year and what we're looking forward to reading in 2022, go be bold and gracious.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.